on the BBC in the Midlands, Keith Middleton's 70s and 80s Extravaganza.
My next guest is a friend of the show. Last spoke to him on the 13th of August 2011. That is a few years ago. He was part of a band which, well, took it by storm in the 1980s, had loads and loads of top 10 hits, and as far as I can see on my list here, there's three number ones in there. He's still going strong to this very day, and guess what? He's coming up at our end, and he's got a special edition out. Let's talk more. Adam Ant, hello.
Hi there, Keith, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Welcome back to the show, should I say.
Thank you, yeah.
2011, a lot of water under the bridge since?
Yeah, it's about 220 gigs I've done since then.
So wow.
It's come a long way.
So you've been keeping yourself busy?
Yeah, I love doing it. I love playing live.
Now, I've got to talk about, I'll talk about Dirk Wears White Socks, which is the 1979 album which is being re-released, and there's a tour of the same name. And you're keeping yourself busy. But Adam and the Ants fans from the 1980s, I remember you well with all the gear and the outfit, and it was pretty flamboyant. Would you describe yourself as flamboyant?
Well, I always like the people I grew up watching, you know, T-Rex and Roxy Music and Alice Cooper and, you know, all those people. They were very flamboyant. So I think the New York Dolls, I was drawn to people that looked as good as they sounded. So
yeah.
I suppose, yeah, I am a bit.
So whose idea was it for the uniform and the face paint?
Well, it was mine, really. I just, I've been thinking about it for quite a while, and I've been through sort of the punk thing. The band started in 1977 in London, and we weren't particularly liked by the media. Therefore, we just got on the road and played wherever we could, but it was kind of Dirk Wears White Socks. This record I'll be playing, the show I'll be playing up and down the country and around your way, was prior to the success, and it wasn't really a punk record. I think everybody was expecting a punk record,
yeah,
and it was completely different. So that kind of rubbed even more salt into the wound, and that's why it's so rewarding to do it now. You know, it's so great to kind of do it again. I mean, I did it in London at the Hammersmith Apollo, and 5,000 sold that out, and then
yeah,
four more. But I thought that album was kind of born in the north and you know, in the south, east and west, so it's nice to take the show to the places where I checked out all the most popular clubs where people like to go see it, because it suits a kind of small place, because that's where it was initially performed.
Yeah. Why didn't the media like you in the early days? I say you, but the band itself.
Because we weren't really political. We weren't in a sort of safety pins and spitting and all that, you know.
Yeah.
It was, I think the songs, listening to the lyrics on Dirk Wears White Socks, they were very much a product of me going to art school and, you know, subjects that intrigued me. You know, they weren't necessarily, let's go get in a dole queue and be angry about whatever. You know, most of them weren't from council flats. I was.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a little bit kind of inverted snobbery, and I just hated the whole lot. Plus the fact, you know, I was wearing leather, and I'd like to celebrate, you know, I think the important elements of great rock and roll records is sex, subversion, style and humour.
Yeah.
And they didn't like anything. They didn't like me talking about, you know, S&M or, you know, they didn't like that. They didn't like anything sexual. It all had to be how terrible things were, and let's destroy the whatever it was.
Yeah. So effectively, you went against the grain for a while.
Yeah, I think always, really. I think it's always there's no point doing what other people are doing it. That's just sort of being a sheep. I've never wanted to be a sheep in my life. I don't want to be one now.
No, I was going to say, you never have been, really, have you? Adam and the Ants from Dirk Wears White Socks, the album. Now, we just spoke about the media not liking the Ants in the early days. And when did the negative turn to a positive as far as the media were concerned?
Yeah, well, there is that, but I, thinking back, you know, I kept journals all through my career, and I noted that, you know, we were playing 3,000-seat venues in London and you know, 1,200 seats up and down the country. So we had a very, very loyal following, which put, you know, Dirk was the first number one independent album. They brought an independent chart out. And that really, at the end of Dirk Wears White Socks, I felt the whole scene had gone very grey and political. There was a lot of drugs there. I hated it. So that really, when I wrote Kings of the Wild Frontier, which was the next record, and it was literally going on television for 3 minutes, and then bang. But, you know, 4 years we've been getting ready for that moment, and you're never ready for it, but it did help the fact that we had an audience that bought the new record and put it in the top 40. You know, that was... Without Dirk, there wouldn't have been Kings of the Wild Frontier or Prince Charming or Two Shoes or any of that. So, you know.
One thing I notice about your music, Adam, is that it's got a distinctive beat through it. Most songs have got that distinctive beat. And if I heard one, I'd say, Adam and the Ants. Was that planned or did it just happen like that?
Yeah, very much so. It was something... I was lucky. I've worked with really great drummers. Dave Barbarossa, who was in my band. In fact, the show I did in Hammersmith Apollo last September... I got Lee and Dave back for that one evening, and they did the very last show with Adam and the Ants in 1979, and they came and played at the Apollo. And, you know, Dave Barbarossa is a great drummer, a really great, great drummer. So I've always had a lot of respect for drummers.
Yes.
You know? This idea of... I heard the Burundi Black single, and I thought, how do you mix that with kind of heroic themes like the buccaneer and the kind of Native American and, you know, the pirate. And with the punk rock, I thought punk rockers were quite heroic because they were walking around every day dressed in a certain way that was very provocative.
Yeah.
And it was quite dangerous. So there was that element of being in a gang, in being in a kind of musical gang. So when I did songs like Magnificent Five, you know, it fitted perfectly. It was just having a hybrid, mixing that kind of... Can you mix that kind of, you know, those triplets and that not fall to the floor drums with a kind of, you know, spaghetti western kind of punk rock record with me singing and yodeling?
Yeah.
You know, so it was that, really.
Brilliant, yeah. Well, obviously, you were born Stuart Goddard. Mm-hmm. When did your name become Adam Ant as such? And who thought of it?
It was late 76. Because I wanted to be a graphic designer from the start, really, Keith. I didn't set out to be a singer. I was in a... It was a kind of gradual thing. I joined a band called Bazooka Joe. I played bass. And we were doing, like, the pub rock scene with, like, Kilburn and the High Roads, who then became the Blockheads, Ian Dury, Dr. Feelgood, Dutch Deluxe. And then around about that time, 74, 75, you know, it was kind of... It was like there was no way in, you know. It was very frustrating. But I was playing bass and I was writing songs with Bazooka Joe and then singing. So I did like an apprenticeship, you know what I mean? Because my first gig was when I was like 16 at school.
Yeah.
But I was always focused on being a graphic designer. But then I saw the Sex Pistols in November 75 when they supported Bazooka Joe at St. Martin's College of Art. And I just thought, this is it. I just knew there was something going to happen.
This is it.
No, it really was. Yeah. I think anybody that saw the Sex Pistols or claims to have really were affected by it. And I know that to be the case up north and in the Midlands. I know that everybody, all those bands, if you actually looked at all the audience in the very small audiences they actually played to on that first tour, most of them, a great number of them went out to form the bands that became punk and post-punk.
You're right, yeah, they did.
there's something inside.
Lovely, yeah, it's Adam and the Ants and Goody Two Shoes. Good song, good tune. Now, the release of the album called Dirk Wears White Socks is current, and the album first released in 1979. Is Dirk a real fella?
Yeah, Dirk Bogarde was the Dirk in the Dirk Wears White Socks title.
Okay.
Was Dirk Bogarde, who's my favourite actor. I loved his work. I thought he had a real class and a wonderfully underestimated actor. You know, I think he's very, very extraordinary. And very, a lot of my mates in the sort of punk rock days had seen a lot of his work, certainly The Night Porter and The Servant and Accident and Victim, all these films. He'd been a sort of film idol for Rank, and yeah. Then he just turned his back on it and just did these quite artistic film, very dangerous films, and that was a great inspiration for me musically. And I'd seen a picture of him on the radio cover of the Radio Times wearing a pair of white socks in a cardigan.
Yeah.
So I just thought, "Dirk Wears White Socks."
Fantastic, fantastic, yeah. And well, you mentioned acting because you're a prolific actor yourself and done quite a bit of television, haven't you?
Yeah, a bit of theatre. I actually started in Manchester. I did Entertaining Mr. Sloan, a Joe Alton play at the Manchester Royal Exchange for 3 months.
Yeah.
Which was a good baptism of fire, and I really enjoyed it, but I knew nothing about it. So I went to LA and started taking classes and worked with some good people, you know, Edward Woodward. I did The Equalizer and Northern Exposure. And then I was a jobbing actor. I took sort of 7 years out of music, and I quite enjoyed it. Yeah. I've been doing it solidly since, well, absolutely solidly since 1980. So come 85, I was kind of ready to have a break, you know.
What do you enjoy best, music or the acting?
They're completely different, but my first love will always be music, songwriting and performing, always. But acting, I have a great deal of respect for actors, certainly theatre actors, enormous amount of respect. The stamina you need, because you're actually working 8 days a week. You do 8 shows a week, which yeah. is one more day than days in the week, and very focused. Film is different, television is different from film and theatre. So I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad that I did it, and I was glad I was able to study it in LA, and I enjoyed it. But the buzz, I didn't get the buzz that I get when I go on stage.
Yeah. Is that where the intricate videos come from?
Yeah, well, the videos came out of, as I said, I was doing graphic design at Hornsey College of Art, and we had a film course there, luckily, just this brief film course. They showed us, we had to storyboard a short film.
Yeah.
So when this video thing came along and they said, well, you know, you can do a video for Ant Music, then I was able to just draw out the lyric. I had the lyric, but I was able to just, rather than bring someone in to say, oh, I'd like that, that, and that, and they go away and draw it, I was able to draw it myself.
Brilliant.
So, when I worked with the various directors I ended up working with, by the time we got to Prince Charming and Goody Two Shoes, it was frame for frame, and I just would draw it out. So the education I had helped me a great deal, and I was able to more or less have creative control of all the videos, which fortunately seemed to touch people in a
brilliant
right place, right time.
Yeah, I can see them now. Now you had you've done a quite successful mini tour, if you like, in the south with Dirk Wears White Socks. So you're branching out to the rest of the UK, as far as we're concerned, and a special edition white vinyl copy of Dirk Wears White Socks is being released.
Yeah,
because you've got a passion for vinyl, haven't you?
Yeah, I love vinyl. I find. I mean, I don't like digital music. To me, it's very sterile, perfection. There's no, you know, I like the... Also, vinyl's better quality, analogue. So I remastered it on my label, Blue Black Guitar Records, and with Sony, who have the original album. And they let me do what I wanted, and I did. You know, it's white vinyl. I remastered it. And inside, it's got a lot of... You know, it's got a poster from the original Dirk tour. It's got stickers, it's got flyers, it's quite a lot in it. People are surprised when they open it up, it's like Pandora's box. So it's a labour of love, really, and I'm going to do that, hopefully, with all the albums I've made, Kings being the next one. So, you know, it was a lovely thing. Every time I sign one, or you know, I meet somebody, you know, when signing and they open it up, I feel very proud of it, because I think it really is, in this day and age, you know, something people are going to keep forever. Not everybody, but the people that like vinyl are going to keep, and vinyl's going all the time.
It's coming back, isn't it?
It's back in a big way. It's just a thing. But when we did in London, when you say playing in the South, I only did London shows. I did the Hammersmith Apollo on 4 is in the Assembly Hall, so I didn't actually tour Dirk.
Right.
So this gives me, I'm going to be doing the South, you know, North, East and West, and taking it right around the country, because I just did it in London, which I felt a bit bad about, because, like I said, the record was kind of born and bred outside of London as well as London.
Yeah.
And I think it was only fair to get out there and go back and play them. And I think April is record store month, and ending in on the 18th is record store day, which I took part in London last year and did two live concerts in the streets of London outside a couple of indie stores, and it was amazing. You know, it's really, that's the way it's going, and I plan to do that in the future.
Take me back to the 80s. Prince Charming, that's Adam and the Ants. More from Adam in just a sec. Did you know I was talking to Adam Ant and I said World Record Shop Day on the 18th of April. What's that?
It's a big deal. It's the single biggest selling day for independent records in the world, bar none. It's a big deal, but it also gives a chance for because the independent companies control it, you know, like it's an independent thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was great to just, I did the two shows the morning of the Hammersmith Apollo show, so I did three shows that day. But it was great to get out on the street. I mean, it absolutely jam-packed, and people just coming along. And you do find certain artists. I know Noel Gallagher was down in Spitalfields. We did something recently, you know, people turning up. And I think if the artists, you know, insist on vinyl, then they'll have to make them.
Yeah. And are you going to be doing the same thing in the Piccadilly area of Manchester on the 18th?
I am going to be appearing in doing a signing of the white vinyl, and we also filmed the Hammersmith show, and I'm going to bring out the DVD of that, which is the first live DVD I've done since 1981. So I've just been editing that for the last couple of weeks, and so it's nice to get in there and support the independent record stores. I think it's very important.
Now, you're also taking it on tour, and as far as we're concerned in our area, on Friday the 10th, you're in Bristol on a Marble Factory. Mm-hmm. Thursday the 16th in Wolverhampton Slade Rooms. Mm-hmm. Friday the 17th, Manchester's Academy 2. On the Saturday, Liverpool's Art Club. On Wednesday the 22nd, that's Leeds Brundenell. Mm-hmm. And 23rd on Thursday, Nottingham's Rescue Rooms. And on the Friday the 24th, Warwick's Copper Rooms.
Yeah.
And that is labelled the Dirk Wears White Sox Tour.
Yeah, so live, yeah.
Live, and coming in, no doubt, you're going to play the whole album.
Yeah, in its sequence, original sequence, and, you know, having played it, you know, five times so far, you know, it improves each time, because it's a surprisingly difficult record to play, very, very challenging for me personally, so I'm looking forward to doing it again. It's quite an intriguing thing to do, because you do the album. I did the album, and I didn't really perform it in its entirety when I made it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's good, and then I'm going to be playing other songs from that period, like early stuff that I like to pull two things out of the bag that I haven't done for many years.
Super, and, yeah. Super.
So it's going to be hopefully a memorable evening for all the people there and myself also. So.
Excellent. We look forward to that. Forward to that. Now, you mentioned digital. Mm. And the, if you like, the technological age.
Yeah.
And you've got a bee in your bonnet, and I don't blame you one iota. Mm-hmm. Is there's a campaign to try and stop the streaming of stuff on the internet, because you don't get a penny from that, do you?
Nobody does. No. I mean, and I think it's to me that's just stealing. That's just you know, a songwriter makes his living out of. Writing a song that sells and is registered, and you get a statutory rate, the same as, you know, anybody else. But it's not just musicians, it's photographers, artists, writers. And there seems to be this idea that everything should be free, but, you know, records cost money to make. And it's not just the established artists, because there is the argument, oh, well, you're so rich, you don't have to worry about it. Well,
yeah.
I don't buy that. You know, I'm a Romani, and I don't, you know, I earn a living, and I look after my family, got work. But it's the new artist, young artist. If it's bad for people, you know, if the people established are complaining, the new artist, the new kids starting bands out, you know, that's a whole stream of their income. You know, they're never going to get to a point where they get paid for what they do for a living.
Of course, yeah.
And these characters, I was asked by Basker, who are behind the Ivor Novello Awards, they asked me to do a documentary on this. And I went down there, and I didn't really know what was going on, but Billy Bragg was there, he'd done it, and Phil Collins and Tim Rice. I thought, well, you know, it's a legitimate thing. I went down and met them, and I was absolutely shocked by the information that the director told me. She was a very informed woman. It's just, they're just not paying anybody anything, and to add an insult to injury, putting an app up showing you how to download it for free.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's all, I'd say that a comparison would be if you had a shop with a load of clothes in it. It's like someone coming in saying, I like that shirt, I'm having that.
I love that, yeah.
And then leaving the shop, he said, excuse me, you can't have that. I said, yeah, but I'm going to wear it, and everybody will come and buy your shirt. I'm wearing it, I'm a good advert. No. You know, do a job or you get paid. Everybody does. And I just think it's, at the end of it, I don't know what can be done. I think it's a political thing. I think it's got to be a statutory, you know, all the government's getting against these people who are, in fact, I've heard they're like Scandinavian guys.
Okay.
Because I wanted to know, who are they? But I didn't know they were, so Vikings, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they're really, you know, there's no control. There's no absolutely no control. And as I said, they're shutting down a lot of venues right now, certainly in London. All the venues in Soho are being shut down and, you know, refabbed and just... Basically, I don't know if that's happening your way, but it's happening in London. And so there are less venues for bands to play live. And now, if they do write a song, instead of it being 1,000-to-1 chance of getting a hit, it's like 1,000,000-to-1 chance of getting a hit.
Yeah.
And that ain't right. And the only thing can stop it is the record companies, the bodies that be. And, you know, I was shocked, absolutely shocked. I was really shocked by how there's no intent to pay people for their work.
Can I wish you well with your quest on that? And like I said, when they do come up with a way to stop it, then more power to your elbow. And also wish you well with the release, a special edition, white vinyl version of Dirk Wears White Socks and the tour to go with it. And if anybody wants to know more about the tour and Adamant generally, it's all the W's, adam-ant.com. Is that right?
Yeah, adamant.com, yeah.
Adam-ant.com. It's been great to catch up with you.
You too, Keith. Thanks very much indeed. That's very kind of you. I really appreciate your letting me have a voice on that.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to the show. So it's going to be very intimate and it's going to be, every night's going to be different, I think, so I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, and can we not let it be so long next time? Because when you do something else, will you come on and talk to us about it?
Yeah, usually I come into town, I'm doing another town the next day, but I will definitely try.
Brilliant. Adamant, thank you.
Thanks very much.
We'll be right back.
going to play those Alaman songs, especially for you, Paul Thompson. Count me in. Any chance of playing Stand and Deliver? You never know. And Paul Fisher. Hello, Paul. How about the song written about you, Keith? Prince Charming. Mustn't forget Sue, though. Puss in Boots. That's a good tune. BBC The Midlands, all over The Midlands on a Saturday night.
The biggest songs from the 70s and 80s. This is Keith Middleton's Saturday Night Extravaganza.